Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and today we're joined by guest Paul Sporer of Rotographs. He's on Twitter, at Sporer, his last name, and I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Today we're going to be talking some Dynasty. Paul, thank you for taking the time to come on.
Bobby, I appreciate you having me on, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know what? I'm pretty bored by this offseason. I mean, it was a lot better than that Super Bowl, but you know, we just keep hearing about mystery teams for Harper and Real Muto's getting close to being traded. We finally had some tangible stuff happen, though. Your boy Curtis Granderson signed.
Yeah, I like that. You can go out to the Marlins, and the first thing I thought of, because obviously being on the Marlins doesn't really matter for much because they're not going to be that good, was it gives me a reason to get some of their new gear, which I'm kind of coming around on. I think it looks kind of cool. Curtis Granderson is my favorite player ever at this point. I mean, it's just my absolute favorite player. And so, yeah, I have no problem picking up gear like on whatever team he's playing for. So, yeah, I'll get some new Marlins gear. And if he gets the front side of the platoon against righties batting at the top of the order, you look at their lineup, if they don't trade Real Muto, which, of course, they're obviously still trying to do, you can see how there's a little bit of deep league fantasy value for Curtis Granderson, too.
I agree with that. Yeah, it's kind of like Nick Markakis. He goes undervalued every single year. It doesn't matter how well he produces. And Granderson's one of these guys. He's going to be great face righties. Every time he's in the lineup, you look at him last year, his OPS was above 800 against righties again. Fantastic clubhouse guy. I'm shocked that a lot of these contenders didn't want his bat off their bench or, you know, in case somebody got hurt and he can just fill in.
You know, I think you mentioned Markakis, and maybe it's that Markakis can really give them a full-time role. But he could have, I think Granderson could have been a great piece for that Atlanta team, that young ball club. But I get it because, yeah, you compare the two, and I guess Markakis can kind of be more of a set it and forget it, even if you want to use him against lefties, whereas Curtis really does need to be managed and kind of protected against lefties at this point. But, you know, the Marlins are rebuilding. You can't get a better clubhouse guy as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, we'll see what he's able to do. And I play enough NL leagues that I'll still be able to get a share of Curtis Granderson this year.
Sounds good. Well, Paul, I really don't want to talk about it, but I know that the listeners are curious what we think about the Bryce Harper mystery teams. So we know the four teams who were in on him, supposedly. Who are your guesses for these mystery teams, or do they not even exist? Is it just a fake story? Probably.
I feel like it's more fake than honestly, every team should be in. My biggest contention of this offseason is the joke of hearing that the Cubs, quote unquote, can't afford to be in on it, that the Chicago Cubs are crying poor. That's hilarious.
I mean, the Marlins could sign Harper and Machado and still without breaking a sweat.
They all could. They're all full of garbage about, you know, what they can afford and can't afford. It's how much they want to cut into the profits. But, you know, it is a spend money to make money scenario, too. You know, and putting the best product out on the field by investing that money, particularly in these two free agents who are the two of the best free agents we've literally ever seen because they're coming out at age 26, makes a lot of sense. I like that the White Sox and Padres are in the mix. You know, they both won under 70 games last year, but they're also on the ascent because of their farm systems. They should very much be in it. I really think anyone should be in it. Maybe the Angels are a dark horse. They've gotten burnt by some recent deals, so they probably aren't, but it would make sense for them. They have Trout. I mean,
that'd be fun. Ohtani, Trout, yes.
It would make a lot of sense still, but I think that they'll be gun shy to go forward with it because of the Hamilton and Pujols deals. But those were the thing of it is, it's like you didn't really need hindsight to see that those weren't going to be good. Signing these guys to 7 to 10 year deals, Harper and Machado, it's going to be hard for that to really fail. It really is because of how good they are and how young they are. But we'll see. I just want it done. It speaks to a problem in baseball when the best free agents are still available. 10 days before spring training starts, before pitchers and catchers report. You look at the other sports, basketball and football primarily, and they have that frenzy early at the front of free agency where things are just going quickly and the big guys are getting signed, and then everything kind of trickles down. Baseball goes the other way, and it's upsetting. It's frustrating. It's my favorite sport, but that doesn't mean it's not flawed and needs a lot of fixing.
100% agree. And the thing is with Harper too, like, NL's probably going to have the DH soon. They're talking about these rule changes. I think that one's inevitable. I'm not so sure about the other ones. Maybe expanding rosters to 26. I think that one has some ground as well.
the thing about the DH is I'm all for it because I think DH should be everywhere. But to give them such a small time to do it, the NL teams, when, you know, we just talked about how it's a slow-moving free agent market, sure, but it still has moved a bunch. And there have been moves that have happened that if they knew they needed a DH now, they might have gone after. You know, I feel like Edwin Encarnacion's trade market might have been a bit more robust if we'd known that that we were going to need a DH if I'm an NL team. You know, things like that. So I'm all for it. But the fact that they could still implement it for 19, and again, we're 10 days or so from pitchers and catchers reporting, that's absolutely absurd.
Yeah, that is bizarre. That doesn't make any sense to me. I didn't really even realize that was a possibility, but it gets me a little bit excited, not because I want the DH. I'm kind of anti-DH NL. I'm opening up to it, but you know, we've got Tyler O'Neill on the bench. We've got Jose Martinez on the bench. I want to see these guys get in the lineup. That's an advantage for my team.
I was just about to say they're the best position team for it with Jose Martinez specifically, because you don't want him anywhere near the field. Tyler O'Neill is an interesting guy, but he can actually play the field. But Jose Martinez is a perfect DH. I wonder if St. Louis management is up front in pushing it for this year. They're like, well, we'll do it. That's fine. We'll take care of it. I wonder if San Diego could be pushing it as well. They have a pretty deep outfield there, and someone like Will Myers, Hunter Renfroe, or Franmil Reyes would make a quality DH as well. So there are a couple teams that are already positioned, but man, that is just so quick to implement it. I think that's a little bit unfair, but you know, Eric Thames would become really interesting again as well. So there are players out there who would be really worthwhile to take a look at, and I do eventually want it there. The only reason I want it is because of pitcher injuries sustained while hitting, and they're terrible at hitting. You know, we can name the exceptions, we can name the key events, and I'm willing to trade the fact that Bumgarner can swing it a bit, Kershaw can swing it a bit. I'm willing to trade that and the Bartolo homer to not lose pitchers to injury while batting, to not lose Jimmy Nelson for an entire year because after a single, he had to dive back into first and busted up his shoulder. So I'm willing to trade all the fun of a pitcher hitting a triple every once in a while or going yard to not have the injuries. It's a worthy trade as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's a good argument. I love the strategy to it, but let's keep these pitchers healthy. Okay, Paul, let's move on, talk about some dynasty questions, okay? I want to start with three dynasty pieces that we each think you can get a discount on. If you're listening to this show and you're trying to make some dynasty trades right now, and I'll start us off with one. JD Martinez, his ECR right now, and that's expert consensus rankings, in dynasty rankings is 33. We're talking about maybe the best hitter in the game. I'm not saying best player. It's obviously Mike Trout. I think Mookie Betts is number two. But best hitter, JD Martinez is absolutely incredible. And people are drafting him behind Rhys Hoskins and dynasty startups. That's far too low. I would go out and get this guy. He's still got 5 great years left.
Yeah, I think that's a great call out there. It's part of that fantasy ageism that I talk about a lot. And, you know, JD Martinez, as a primary DH now into his 30s, is going to face that. And I think sometimes dynasty startups get a little bit too focused on the youth, and they start drafting, you know, 18-year-olds who, you know, they want to get on that Wander Franco train before they would take JD Martinez. And that to me is absolutely absurd.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing is, a lot of these leagues are going to last for a long time. But if you're in one of these leagues where it's kind of a startup and you're not really sure how long it's going to last, I mean, your league might be over in 3 or 4 years. Try to win now.
I mentioned that a lot too with dynasties. Don't assume that it's necessarily going to last for a long time and punt the first 2 years, and then the third year it fizzles out when all your players are coming of age and you don't get to do anything with it. So you just contributed free money for 2 years. But yeah, absolutely agree with that. And I do think that I'm going out in a dynasty league that starts from scratch. I'm trying to win year one without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing is too, it's really fun to rebuild, and everyone's doing that in the off season, thinking, you know, the season's so far away, I want to build the best team for the future. You can take advantage of that. People have the trade itch. You go out and get yourself a JD Martinez. Paul, who do you like?
I like a prospect, but he's going down a little bit. Doesn't get as much hype. Luis Urias for the San Diego Padres. he's a really interesting player that I don't think gets that prospect hype in dynasty leagues that shoots up his value to an obscene cost. He's going to be the shortstop for them, for the Padres to start this year. He's more of a second baseman, but they got Ian Kinsler. He can handle short. He should bat first or second in that lineup. Now, this comp's going to sound extremely lofty given what the other player has done at this point, but this was just the look that he cut when I saw him at the Arizona Fall League. Luis Urias had a real Jose Ramirez look to him. Even with the home run that he did hit that I saw in the Fall League, I'm not saying that that's the trajectory he's going to take, because no one really saw Jose Ramirez becoming a 30-40 home run hitter the last two, well, 29 and 39, but let's just round. 30 home run and then 40 home run hitter the last 2 years. So that's not what I'm saying right now. But look at the seasons before that, the 15 and 16 seasons as Ramirez was kind of rounding into form. I do think that there can be some extra power from Urias, because he wasn't a huge power guy in the minors. I think he can get to some mid-teens type of power with some 20s speed and big batting average, nice hit tool. So he's like one of those solid glue guys. He's not completely overwhelming your team as a first rounder or anything, but he's a really solid player. And hey, maybe he goes the full bore with the comp. But again, I'm talking pre-Uber breakout Jose Ramirez. I'm talking the good, not great Jose Ramirez comp when I'm talking about Luis Urias.
I like that long term. I mean, you kept hearing about his exit velos and just his mature approach at the plate. Those are the types of things I like to hear about young players. Not, raw tools. Who knows if those are going to develop. Urias is a gamer. Now, I'm looking at his projections, and obviously part of this is from him playing in San Diego, and I do like the lineup. So he's going to score some runs. He's going to get some RBIs if he's batting, towards the middle of that lineup instead of the top. I think it probably will be the top, but they're projecting him on Steamer. 8 homers, 5 stolen bases, .247. I'm wondering if he's one of these cases where you can wait a year, like a couple guys we're going to talk about later, maybe Scott Kingery, where you wait a year and he struggles and you can get him super cheap.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I definitely think that if things don't quite pan out and he kind of meanders through the season, the off season of next year could be the time to buy somebody like Luis Urias as well.
All right, my next guy is a prospect as well. Now, he's not going to be a rookie this year, probably not for 2 or 3 years. But if you're in one of these dynasty leagues with a deep farm system, if I had to pick one guy whose stock is just going to absolutely explode, kind of the way, Juan Soto's stock did or Wander Franco, it's Estevan Florial. I don't see any way he's not going to be a top 10 prospect unless he continues to get injured. He had one injury last year that set his stock back. Otherwise, he was probably going to be a top 20, 25 guy this year. Now he's at about 60. But Estevan Florial, it's kind of like Gleyber Torres. You look at him and you just don't see a way that he's not a perennial all-star eventually. And he's going to be playing for the Yankees as well. Have you seen this kid play, Paul?
I have. I actually saw Florial in the Arizona Fall League as well. Really interesting, skilled guy. Didn't hit any homers at the Arizona Fall League, but you could see good bat to ball. And he wasn't playing all that well. This is one of those situations where you look at the stats and they weren't good. But when you're watching him play, you're seeing some of the quality at bats that he's taking, you understand why there's some excitement about Estevan Florial. There was concern about his swing and miss, and he did show it there in the Fall League specifically. And that's something that if he's going to be a batting average guy, because he doesn't have enough power to really justify being a huge strikeout guy, but he's also 20. Like, he was in the Fall League at age 20. He was actually there at age 19 in 2017 as well. So he's had 2 years there. And that's kind of a finishing school. It's not a huge pitcher's league or anything, but that's pretty young to be there playing. So they think highly of him with the Yankees. And I'm kind of intrigued to see what he can do, because he can be one of those guys that gets you a little bit of a power contribution, lots of speed. And then if he does curb the strikeouts, then the batting average could be really high. He's a .281 career hitter in the minors so far. So if he gets that strikeout rate in order, watch out for the batting average for sure.
I like it. All right, Paul, who's your number two here?
My next guy is buying back on a TJ guy. And one of two you could have put here. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and say take your favorite between AJ Puck and Brent Honeywell. I'm just a big fan of both. And I was really bummed that both were felled by Tommy John last year, setting their paths back a little bit. However, it does create a buying opportunity. in dynasty leagues. Even with them coming back this year, they're going to be a little bit more front and center on the radar. You're still getting a major discount compared to what you would have had to pay at this time last year when it looked like they were going to contribute. Honeywell is the righty for the Tampa Bay Rays, who had a really solid 2017 season, missed all of 2018, that didn't make it back in time at all. So this year's going to be his rehab season. And again, maybe this winter would be the time to buy. Although I will say, if they have a good second half, their price is going to go up. So I'd buy now while the getting's good. Puck is a really impressive lefty, college lefty for the A's, who I thought was going to contribute to their team. It's funny. I want to take credit for having the A's in the playoffs last year as one of my playoff picks. But I want to take credit for it, but I got it right for the wrong reasons. Part of my big thing was that AJ Puck and Jarrell Cotton were both going to put up 150 high quality innings. So it's like one of those things where you get the math problem right, but then you show your work and that part was wrong, so you don't get full credit. So it's like I was happy that they made it. I kind of had them as a sleeper club, but two of my main components as to why didn't even play for them. But Puck is still somebody I'm very much buying in on. He's got big swing and miss capability. He's going to be a little bit, still rehabbing this year, kind of coming back. But I think they could turn him loose in the second half with the Major League Ball Club. And he could be a redraft fantasy asset this year, too, with AJ Puck specifically. With Honeywell, he could, but I'm a little more worried about the way Tampa Bay does things. Like, they're really cautious, whereas I think Oakland might be more open to letting Puck return and get back on track already this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at both these teams. I mean, the A's have Luzardo coming up as well. They could be in the playoffs once again. And when you get Puck and Luzardo going, if you don't know who Luzardo is, guys, he's a top 10 prospect. If it wasn't for Forrest Whitley, he'd be the consensus top pitching prospect in baseball. And then Puck, the last year he was healthy, 125 innings, 184 strikeouts in the minor leagues. I mean, the guy is a 6'7 lefty, absolute stud. And it's kind of funny. I was going to talk about Brent Honeywell as well. And I'm not going to go off of him because there's a concept I want to talk about here. It's arbitrage. People are talking about this for stocks and everything. You can do this for stocks and fantasy baseball, dynasty baseball especially too. I want the guy who's going to break out onto the scene. He might not have the most potential long term. Like, I don't think Honeywell's ever going to be a Cy Young contender like Blake Snell or anything like that. But he has this funky, delivery, screwball, release point, everything like that. And it kind of reminds me of Dontrelle Willis. When he broke onto the scene, he was so dynamite right away until people started to figure him out. And I think Honeywell is going to be the same, where he's immediately a strong number two, and you can flip him. Everyone's going to think, well, this guy has the path it's going to take him to be a Cy Young. So I want to get guys like these before they break out and then sell them high. And I see Honeywell as someone that you can sell high next offseason.
I really like that. And again, I agree, because if they both have the big second halves where they're pitching ideally for their ball clubs, for their major league ball clubs, and then people remember, or maybe they not that they forgot about these guys, but they're front and center on the radar. And it's like, ooh, now I got to get them because 2020 is going to be the big breakout. And then you cash in and you get more than you paid at this point right now when you're buying Puck and Honeywell. So I agree with that, of course.
Paul, this Rays rotation, I'm looking at it. Is there any other rotation in the big leagues with as much upside? Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Charlie Morton, Jake Faria, and then you've got Honeywell coming up as well. They've got Kiermaier manning center field. This team is so fun.
They really are, and it's crazy. You know, they won 90 games last year, and they weren't really that close to the playoffs because of how insane things were in that division. But I think they should be right there again this year in terms of a competing team. You know, Jose De Leon is somebody who was a pretty big prospect, and he's working his way back from TJ. He's a cut below somebody like a Honeywell, but he's intriguing. You mentioned Jake Faria, who I'm pretty intrigued by coming back this year. He's fully off the radar, just 100% off the radar. And when he first came up, there was a lot of excitement around what he was doing. He had kind of a bummer 2018. Could be interesting to see him bounce back in 19 and become a big piece. I do think that Ryan Yarbrough and Yanni Chirinos, they became kind of the secondary guy after the opener. I think both of them could get bounced out, and there could be a point where Tampa Bay is not even using an opener if it's Snell, Morton, Glasnow, Honeywell, and then one of Faria or De Leon. If their rotation's cooking, they're not going to use the opener just to use it. They used it out of necessity last year because of what they had in the starting rotation.
What do you think about the opener? Is that bad baseball?
No, I have no problem with it. You know, I think right now we really need to expand how we're using pitchers. too much of it right now, and this was something that my boy Doug Thorburn keyed in on when he and I used to podcast many moons ago, was that it was way too set where you were either a six-inning guy or a one-inning guy and nothing in between. And it's absurd that there's nothing in between, because clearly there are guys who could be two, three, four-inning guys somewhere in the mix there, and you have to figure that out. And we're leaving innings on the table, I believe, particularly with relievers, where they become one-inning guys and they should be two or three-inning guys. So the Josh Hader role of the world, it's not new, by the way. They're kind of throwing back to what the old-school closers used to be and guys like Mike Marshall used to be. I think we need to get to more of that. And that way, if you actually use these relievers for two inning stints with regularity, you wouldn't need 13 arms on your team. You can get a deeper bench and you wouldn't have to churn through so many pitchers. So no, I really don't mind the opener. Again, it's not going to kill the Verlanders of the world, or even the Blake Snells on his own team. They weren't doing it with Blake Snell. So the idea that it's going to ruin things with starting pitching, I just don't see it that way.
Paul, it annoys me so much when I hear people say, this is ruining baseball. We need to make rules so they can't do it. Don't you want the game to be as competitive as possible? If there's more strategy and it makes a team better, great. The entire league should change. I want to see the best, most competitive game possible. And I think the opener does that. I mean, I've been doing this in out of the park baseball for years, right? And I never understood why teams didn't do this. Kevin Cash is the man for being so brave and doing this.
I love it.
And it works. It really does work. So I think it's good.
It definitely works. If you have the team to do it, and that's what you need to do. We're going to see more of it this year too, for sure. So I'm eager to see how it works across the league.
All right, Paul, let's move on. You've got your third and final dynasty piece.
All right, so I debated here, and I'm the guy I was going to use is still going pretty high in dynasty, so I'm actually going to use him, I think, for the next question. So I'm actually going to go with Joe Adell, or Jordan Adell. You might see him listed at other places, but he goes primarily by Joe Adell. Now, he is not in that, top 20, top 30 hype for prospect leagues right now. Yet, I think he has the ability to be or could merit such a pick. He's a really exciting outfield prospect for the Los Angeles Angels organization. And he's relatively close, too, despite only going into his age 20 season. He had a three-level season last year that finished in Double-A. He's going to go back there. It was only 17 games, and they weren't all that great, so he needs more seasoning there. But if he has a dual season in Double and Triple-A this year, then, of course, he's just a stone's throw away. And I don't think he's going high enough in Dynasty Leagues, at least from what I've seen so far. If his price has gone up, definitely correct me. But on the heels of now being a top five or so prospect too. So I think dynasty leagues that maybe start later in February and beyond, maybe he starts to go up because people are going to see. I think Baseball Prospectus had him too, I believe. And so he's going to be up there in the top five, but in the early dynasty leagues I've seen, and here on the Fantasy Pros page, he's all the way down, I think, at 58. Right now, you can still get Joe Adell without all the crazy hype going around him, but that hype train is about to burst. And you need to get in now, and you might even be able to get him at a fair. It's going to be expensive if you go trade for him now in your established dynasty league, but the price is going up. So you talk about the arbitrage. Even if you didn't want to keep him, you could trade for Joe Adell right now, and you could probably flip him for a mint and get more than you paid just in a month from now. I think that's how close we are to the Joe Adell train absolutely blowing up.
The expert consensus rankings for dynasty leagues have him at 211 overall. That's behind guys like Jose Martinez, who's not even starting this year. That's behind guys like Sean Manea. I see some upside eventually, but we're talking about a top five prospect. He's got to be the favorite to be the number one overall prospect this time next year. Just an absolute stud in every facet of the game. You look at Juan Soto this time last year. Juan Soto was 18, 19 years old in the minor leagues, putting up very similar numbers, right? His OPS was right there around 980. Joe Adell last year in the minor leagues, his OPS was 900. He had 20 homers, 15 stolen bases as a teenager at three levels, like you mentioned. This guy is going to be a monster. I agree with you. If you can get him for cheap now, I would definitely do it.
Yeah, take a look. Just see where the price is at. And you might be able to get him at a very fair price right now. Again, an expensive fair price. I want to be clear that you're not going to go steal him from anybody, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't go get Adell and then either hold him and get yourself a top 4 prospect in all the game, or flip him for the prices that not quite what somebody like Vlad Guerrero is going for, but right underneath that. In about a month or two, I think his price is going to balloon.
It is still buying low, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at these names on the list ahead of him, and I there's literally 80 or 90 that I would rather have Adele than. So, is there anyone you would sell high on at this point? I've got Miguel Andujar. I just don't really know if he sticks at third base. He's so bad there. Maybe he gets traded.
He won't. He can't stick to third base. Well, I shouldn't say can't. The one thing that you can kind of fix just on hard work alone in the majors is defense. You know, we've seen guys change their hitting profile and become better, but they're exceptions. So we can kind of reel them off the top of our head with like Dan Murphy, the aforementioned JD Martinez, et cetera, et cetera. Like there's a group. But even they had skills beforehand. I'm not sure that they completely remade themselves. You can't become a lot faster if you're not a speed guy. You can't really become a super home run hitter if you're D. Gordon, but you can become a quality defender just on hard work and training with your staff. So that is something that just flat out work can change. So I won't say he can't for Miguel Andujar. I'm betting against it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would then want to trade him because then you're looking at a first baseman who... It's solid, and first base is actually a little rough this year.
It's a little bit better than Josh Bell in steamer projections. Josh Bell's going like pick 250.
Exactly. So, you know, he's a quality hitter, Miguel Andujar is, but I agree that he's going to get moved off. You're going to have third base for this year and probably even next year. But then if you are looking deep into the future, since there is always a Yankee tax as well, and what if they trade him and then you don't get that Yankee tax? So I would move him now as well. I agree. On the peak of a great rookie season, the fact that he's still firmly at third base... Go ahead and move him now and get out from under any potential change there.
His rookie year was a lot better than everyone expected as well. The StatCast measures had him performing above what he actually should have. So we'll see how that plays out this year. Paul, is there someone that you would sell high on?
There is a guy I would entertain, and it's not because I dislike him. It's because I feel like you could get such a haul, you'd have to entertain trading David Dahl out in Colorado because the hype machine has really fired up on him now. They finally cleared a spot for him. I know that there were recent reports that they're talking to Cargo again, and if they do that, I swear to God, I'm so sick of this organization blocking young players. You know, they seem to hate Ryan McMahon with a burning passion. You know, for fantasy, Daniel Murphy going there is going to be awesome and super fun. But for the fact, if you look at their team, they did not need that at all. And, you know, as somebody who really loves Garrett Hampson, I was kind of worried about that if they thought maybe putting of Murphy at second base. Thankfully, he's going to...
And Brandon Rogers.
Yeah, Brandon Rogers is right there on the cusp as well. They just seem to keep blocking. Like the Ian Desmond thing, if you go back and look at it, and I've always been an Ian Desmond guy, but if you go back and look at it, they did not need that. They've needed a hitter for a while. They're not signing the right one. So right now, I don't think that even if they did bring in Cargo, I think that would actually mean worse for Desmond than Dahl. David Dahl is going very high in leagues. He's going to be batting in the middle of that lineup. It looks like he's finally got the clear runway to get his full chance. Health's been an issue, though, too. And Colorado, of course, can get you a mint with players. I say you go out and at least entertain trading David Dahl. Again, this is not a get out from under something that you don't like. This is maybe cash in a major, major chip before he does something. Because what if he flops or I don't really think he's going to flop, but he could flop or if he gets hurt again. So I think you just have to entertain trading David Dahl. That's all.
I love David Dahl. He's a really quality player. He was fantastic after the All-Star break, 896 OPS. You know, he's got some speed as well. I think he's going to be someone who hits 280, 290 in this league. But the issue is he is so risky. And as much as I love him, there is always someone in every league who loves him a ton more than me. And that guy's willing to pay just a fortune.
Yep. And you got to see what he might be paying right now. And you might be surprised with the absolute mint. If you're a team that's struggling a little bit in approaching your dynasty draft this year, thinking I need to fill multiple holes, I got to figure some things out here. A guy like David Dahl could cover 3 of your open spots and really improve you there. And it might just be a better diversification of your asset there.
Paul, we've talked about Vladimir Guerrero on this show already so much in the preseason. We don't really need to cover him here. But what rookie do you most want to own long-term besides Vlad?
That's interesting. Yeah, obviously he's far and away the number one. I would say it's the guy I was going to mention in the last question about somebody that I think you could maybe get for a little bit of a cheaper price. Again, it would have been a high price, but a cheaper than I think he should be, and that's Kyle Tucker for the Houston Astros. I think that the hype has died down a little bit on him, and it's weird too because it's not really post hype, but he did come up and he didn't do anything, and if the prospect market can be very fickle in fantasy baseball. You come up, you have 72 bunk at bats, you don't do anything for them. That's a nothing sample, by the way. It means literally
like Mike Trout's rookie year.
Yeah, it means literally nothing. Even if he'd have had a 1044 OPS, it would mean nothing the other way because it's just too small. But I think that the market has depressed on him a little bit. And again, he's going cheaper in redraft than he is in dynasty. People understand that Tucker's a real prospect. I'm not saying you're stealing him. But again, I think this is one you could buy now. Maybe your David Dahl deal gets Tucker plus, whereas if people weren't overreacting, Dahl and Tucker should probably be 1-1. So the fact that you could turn around, flip Dahl, get Tucker and something else, that's kind of what I'm speaking to as far as trading Dahl and maybe going to buy Tucker. Because I still think the sky's the limit with him.
I think Tucker's a better version of Dahl and less risky because of the injury stuff.
We haven't seen injuries like that with Dahl. Now, of course, Coors helps everything. And the ABC of fantasy, always bet on Coors. So I understand if people still like Dahl a little bit more, but Tucker's going to be age, I think this is age 22 season. He's ready. He doesn't have the clear path right this moment. But if you learn anything from the Cody Bellinger thing a few years back, don't get hung up on players being blocked, particularly premium talent prospects. It will play itself out. Josh Reddick is not blocking anybody. If he goes down and dominates the way Tucker can, he's going to come up and Josh Reddick's going to get relegated to a fourth outfielder. He's a perfectly quality player. He's a great outfielder, et cetera, et cetera. He's not blocking Kyle Tucker if Kyle Tucker's ready and raring to go.
You're right, just like Juan Soto last year. And I thought it was going to be Victor Robles who was ended up called up, but Soto broke onto the scene.
Right? Everyone did.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt.
Now, I definitely agree Tucker's a good call, and I want to mention this, okay? Anthony Rizzo started his season with 31 games, twice the sample size, batted 195 with a 658 OPS. And we're still drafting Anthony Rizzo without hesitation. Kyle Tucker is extremely good. Don't give up on him. And if somebody owns him and is giving up on him, you can get a great value. My guy here is Eloy Jimenez, and I've talked about him pretty extensively as well. I think if Vlad was not in the minors, that everyone would be saying, man, Eloy is one of the best prospects we've seen in a long time. Now, he's obviously a lot bigger than Manny Ramirez, but same type of player. I could see him hitting 300, 40 home runs, 120 RBIs, being a middle-of-the-order threat for a long time. Just an absolute masher. He's got a borderline plus-plus hit tool, borderline plus-plus power tool. That combination is super rare.
Oh, absolutely. Eloy Jimenez is fantastic. You know, he's part of the reason that the White Sox are in on Machado or Harper. More Machado, it seems, because they're, you know, getting his brother-in-law and Yonder Alonso, his big college buddy, John Jay, etc. You know, they seem to be positioned really to focus on Machado. Jimenez is a big part of that because you're also that's basically you're adding both of them this year because Jimenez will be up at some point, probably around that time that Vlad is, that 2-week marker to get that extra year of control, and he's gonna be ready to take off. I remember seeing him, we were on the field, you know, Sarah's was able to get me on the field for batting practice at the Arizona Fall League Rising Stars game a couple years ago, and just listening.
Everyone probably thought you were Christian Yelich.
Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe I could have gotten on my own and just said, hey, do you know who I am? You know, the sound thing, you hear that about, like, it sounds different. And I think some people think that that's BS. And I understand why people might think that until you actually experience it and you really are like, no. It sounds different. And there are certain premium hitters where it absolutely sounds different when they're taking batting practice. And Eloy Jimenez was one of those. And I had it front and center being down there on the field just listening to him. He's a physical specimen. He's got all of it too. And, you know, he's not some speedster, but I wouldn't even be surprised if for the first few years of his major league career, he's kind of a 7-10 stolen base guy too. Just gives you a little bit of a chip in help there while blasting mid-20s homers with a great batting average and then solid runs and RBIs depending on how well the rest of the White Sox do, because he'll be batting at the top of the order.
Man, I'm excited about him. The game has so many great young players, and I can't wait to see them all. A prospect or two you're especially high in compared to the industry. I already talked about them in the show with Steve Gardner, Jazz Chisholm, who I know you saw down there as well, and then Luis Patino, who I think is a breakout pitcher for the Padres. Incredible stuff. Do you have a couple for us, Paul?
I like those names that you're talking about there. I'm going to go a little bit homer. I'm a Tigers guy, and so I'm going to talk about a few that we have because Tigers are getting their act together with their rebuild. And the lineage thing has been a big deal right now that we've been seeing with a lot of teams across the league. It's kind of a league-wide thing. And Daz Cameron's part of that as well, Mike Cameron's son. He cuts a real interesting figure similar to Dad, right down to the power-speed combo. He might not have as much power, but has more speed and can play that center field defense. So the defense should be locked and loaded there for Daz Cameron. And like I said, I'm going to go full homer and go another Detroit Tiger, Kristen Stewart. And he could start contributing just this year right away because he's not a very good defender. He should probably DH, although Miggy's going to man most of that. So they can stick him out in left field. They're not going anywhere this year. There's no reason to worry that much. But Kristen Stewart can be a 30-homer guy this year. He's got that kind of pop. And in an OBP league, you should really like him because while the batting average isn't something I would get super excited about, he walks. He knows what he's doing up there at the dish. So he might be a 240 average, but a 350 OBP and then a 500-plus slug for 30-plus homers. So I'll go super homer on the Tigers and say Daz Cameron and Kristen Stewart. I think the Tigers prospects need to start getting some attention. They also have a group of pitchers coming up soon, too. I'll give you a bonus one. And everyone knows Casey Mize was the 1-1 guy and Franklin Perez was in the Verlander deal. Don't sleep on Matt Manning, a former one of their top prospects.
Oh, absolutely. He's an ace in the making, too. They're going to have two or three of them.
He's on the come up. Yep. And so things are getting better there. I actually have some prospects to talk about with my beloved Tigers, so I'm excited there, and I'm really eager to see some of the dividends coming this year with both of those guys that I named, Stewart and Cameron. Stewart, for sure, he should start with the team and just be ready to go, but then Cameron could be up in relatively short order.
Cameron reminds me a lot of Harrison Bader, who is very useful in fantasy league formats. And Kristen Stewart, he's going to contribute right away. If it wasn't for Vlad Jr., I'd say he has a chance to be AL Rookie of the Year, but I'm pretty sure we all know Vlad Jr. is going to take that one home. So, Paul, I want to talk a little bit about Ohtani's future. So he's not pitching this year. He's just going to be hitting. And he was really good hitting last year. He had a bunch of bombs, stole a lot of bases, and that was in limited playing time. I think he's going to be awesome, and maybe he's even going undervalued as a hitter this year. But if he hits really well, are they going to put him back on the mound next year?
I guess it would depend how well he hits. But I think yes. My instinctual answer is yes, that they are still going to go for putting him on the mound next year, at least in a limited capacity. Maybe they won't start him at that point. If he just goes out and hits the way some of us believe, and I'm among those, obviously, we got word that he's probably not going to start the season ready to go. So there'll be a little bit of time off. But this guy is such a premium hitter that I think he could, even missing some time, still pop 30 homers this year. And he's got real speed. So he could go like 30-15 this year, even missing a month. Like, that's how absurd Ohtani's bat is. I still think they would want to entertain pitching him, whether it's a starter or more of a middle relief role. That's what I'm open to adjusting, because we saw he can be a premium starter too. It's just, he is as good as advertised. That's the crazy thing. Like, he is living up to the absolutely obscene hype that we saw from last year, and that's why he won Rookie of the Year. Listen, sorry, Yankees fans. Andujar was not robbed. Andujar was a very fitting candidate himself, and if he had won, I wouldn't have been mad.
Oh, I would have been. I think it is absurd that they had that case.
But for me, it was Ohtani. Like, I was definitely an Ohtani guy, and you just don't see a guy go out there and hit the way he does and then just tack on 50 great innings of pitching. So I think they want to still keep the dual eligibility in some form. So yes, I do still think he would maybe just relieve or pitch, you know, every once, maybe twice a month or something, even if he comes out and hits his face off this year.
If you prorate his games out to 162 a full season, 34 homers, 95 RBIs, 92 runs, .285 batting average, 16 stolen bases. As a 23-year-old focusing also on pitching, if he was just hitting, we could be talking about one of the top 10 hitters in baseball.
Right? It's absolutely nuts what he's able to do with Ohtani, and I'm really encouraged by what he did last year, and I can't wait for him to get back fully healthy.
If you're in one of these leagues that allows him to be a pitcher and a hitter, it's not two separate players. His ECR right now in dynasty formats is 57. I mean, he could be one of the top 10 players in fantasy baseball in dynasty leagues. Like I mentioned, he's still just 23 years old. I think he's a great value as well that I would go out and put an offer in on. Now, what I want to talk about Walker Buehler. Do you think he's the single best pitcher in dynasty baseball?
He's certainly up there. We'd probably have to talk about the reigning AL Cy Young winner as well in Blake Snell. I think he's got himself a case. He's only going to be 26. Buehler is super young, and so when you factor in that age and development so far after the big rookie season of his own, he's going to be 24 this year, so he's a couple years younger. But yeah, I think he's right up there, and I think he's bypassed some of the guys who are the more established studs that are in their late 20s, early 30s, just because he is so young. Another one I would say, though, and I love him, and I know he hasn't put up a 200-inning season yet, but I think this is going to be the full breakout year for Noah Syndergaard, and I could totally see him being up there as well. And then one other name I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, Luis Severino. You know, he had the amazing start to the season last year, came back to the pack a little bit in the second half, but he's still an absurd talent. But yeah, despite mentioning those guys just to get them in there, I think there is a strong case for Buehler as the number one dynasty guy. I think he's right there. I think you can take those four personally and kind of rank them how you want. It's tough to go. You can't really go Scherzer. I know we just talked about being short-term focused, but it's not like these guys are long-term focused. Anyway, they're going to either be on a par with Scherzer or just behind him, and they're six, seven years younger. So you can't put Scherzer there. You can't put Kluber. I don't think you can put Sale, because again, these guys are going to be right with them and several years younger. So yeah, I do think it's the group of young guys.
Our consensus rankings, this surprises me, has Chris Sale number one, Kluber, Syndergaard, Max Scherzer, and then Blake Snell. I would put Blake Snell still number one. I mean, he's coming off the greatest second half in the last 50 years, 1.17 ERA, 0.155 batting average against, 12.7 Ks per nine. He was by far the best pitcher in baseball in the second half last year. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's the best pitcher this entire season. And he's still really young, too. So he's my number one guy. I've got Buehler probably three or four. I think I'd put Syndergaard in there, too.
So I think that's a perfectly solid pick. You can't really go wrong between Snell, Buehler, and then for me, Thor and Severino are right there as well as far as the number one dynasty guy.
They're all really close together. It's not like, you know, Trout and Mookie Betts and Ronald Acuna blowing everyone else away in the hitters. All like of the top eight starting pitchers are pretty close. You can make an argument for a lot of them. Now, I mentioned Tyler O'Neill briefly earlier, and you alluded to the Padres, you know, having so many outfielders. Franchi Cordero is blocked. Tyler O'Neill is blocked. What do you do with players like this in Dynasty?
You know, you just have to stick with them. If you believe in the talent, particularly Tyler O'Neill, I believe in a bit more than someone like Franchi Cordero. So we've been talking about it's kind of the theme here, arbitrage, and being able to get in on a player when he's cheaper because of that perceived blockage. Or even flat out, right? It perceives, suggests that it's not there. No, they, you know, Tyler O'Neill is blocked right now, but it's not something that his talent can't force a move for. And so if he performs, if you believe in a player and he performs to the level that you believe in, then that block becomes a lot less of a problem and teams figure things out. A lot of this stuff tends to work itself out. And so I think it's a buying opportunity when I have a prospect that I like who is blocked off a little bit or a little bit away and somebody wants to move on because they want a here and now piece for April and May. It's a 6-month season, you know. Things happen. Injuries happen. Tyler O'Neill could easily find his way up mid-May, and then all of a sudden you're getting 4.5 months of production, and he can put up a heck of a season. Franchi, I'm a little less geeked on, but even it's the same scenario, though. He is blocked, but there's things open up. Will Myers has not stayed healthy when he hasn't played first base, and he's going to be in the outfield again. We'll see if he can stay healthy. I don't think Franmil Reyes and Hunter Renfro are perma-blocking anybody. So, yeah. I think you just go and try to buy those guys if they're blocked and their price comes down, because you can get a discount relative to how you value them.
Same kind of question here. We've got two absolute freaks of nature in Rafael Devers and Byron Buxton, who just really haven't lived up to the hype yet. They were both former top five prospects. At what point do you give up on these guys?
Well, for me with Buxton, I've already kind of like lowered his ceiling. And that's like a kind of a nebulous concept anyway, because, you know, what is a ceiling? You don't carry your ceiling around with you. And he could just break through and absolutely beast out and eclipse his 2017 or something. And then I'm like, well, I shouldn't have lowered the ceiling or whatever. But in terms of my expectations of someone like Buxton, I know he's going to be age 25. He's not like he's been around forever. But I don't see, you know, you have to try to map out where the skills growth comes from and how realistic it is that the skills change. And with that kind of swing and miss that we've seen out of Byron Buxton, I just don't understand, you know, where it's going to change to make him a superstar. There was a piece that Eno Saris did years ago, a couple years ago now, talking about some of the comps for Byron Buxton. And it included the names of like Cameron Maben and it was BJ at the time now, Melvin Upton. And, you know, of course, that was like bothering people, like, oh, what the heck? What are you talking about? He's going to be a superstar. And it's like, well, if you go look, a Melvin BJ Upton career path at this point wouldn't be so bad for, you know, a couple. There's a handful of years there where he's pretty quality. Now, it wouldn't be the sky high ceiling that everyone projected for him, but it's a lot more reasonable trajectory that I think Buxton can actually reach. As far as Devers goes, that's somebody that I'm really interested in. Because, you know, he did have the rough season last year. And I think that this is now the time to buy.
He's 22 years old.
22. And I mentioned how fickle the prospect market is. They're already moving him down. People are already moving off of him a bit. If your bad season, if your flop season is like a 90, 95 WRC plus, so you're just below average. You're like 5 to 10%, depending. I think the OPS plus was 95, the WRC plus was 90, and those stats aren't that different. So we'll just say he was about 5 to 10% below average. If that's your bust season, I'm buying at age 21 because of where I think his ceiling can go. He mentioned that he was carrying some extra weight, Dever said, and he's trimmed that weight. He's a little bit more svelte, ready to move. And I think the hit tool is substantial. So I am very much in on Rafael Devers.
I agree. Buxton's never going to hit 270, never going to hit 25 homers. Devers, though, he's got a great career ahead of him as far as I'm concerned. I'm trying to buy him. Now, I want to talk about four young pitchers, and I just want, you know, which one of these is your favorite? Which one of them do you not like, if any at all? Luis Castillo, Freddy Peralta, Denelson Lamet, and Lucas Giolito. Do you like any of these guys a lot more than the others?
I do. I'm still a very big Luis Castillo guy. He was somebody I was hyping up quite a bit last year, and it didn't work out to the degree that I was hoping for, but he did have a big second half that kind of kept his price at bay, interestingly enough. For the season that Luis Castillo had, for his price to not really move down, kind of surprised me. I thought I could buy back in at the discount, but no, there is no real discount.
It's a bummer, isn't it?
Yeah, folks saw the second half and they're buying right back. That hasn't deterred me from buying. I was just hoping to get it at a better price, but I still fully believe in Luis Castillo's talent and his arsenal, and I'm excited about Derek Johnson, the pitching coach, who was the former coach of Vanderbilt, going over there. He had some good success out in Milwaukee with pitchers, and I'm excited to see what he can do with somebody like Luis Castillo. So he's easily my number one off of this list. Right now, I'm pretty far off of Giolito. I need to see something that matters before I can really buy in, and I'm open to making the move when he does. You know, I can adjust as information comes in, but right now I'm completely off of him. Denelson Lamet, he's coming back from TJ. I don't think he's going to be a 19 factor. And I'm still worried that he's really a two-pitch guy. So I need to see a little bit more from him. The strikeout stuff is nice. And he's going to be interesting when he does fully come back. And maybe that second half this year. But it's probably more of a 2020 thing. And I'm still like, he's a mid-tier guy at best. And then Freddy Peralta is really interesting. His fastball is absurd, though. And I love a guy with an elite fastball. And I mean, that's pretty much all he has, if we're being honest, but it is a really, really good pitch. So I'm eager to see.
He throws like 93, right? So what is it that's so good about his fastball? Because I know it might be the best fastball in the game, but what is it that makes it so good?
It's delivery and deception. So you can get extension and deception with your delivery can make a 93 mile per hour fastball play up, not to mention the fact of where you're putting it. Up and in triggers effective velocity and can make 93 look like 96. So if you're getting extension as well, all of a sudden you're cutting the time that it takes for the ball to get to the plate, and then all of a sudden your 93 looks like 96 as well. So if you add those two factors, now all of a sudden your 93 looks like 98, right? It kind of stacks on top of each other. David Robertson has really good extension, so he's never thrown super hard, but his 93 looks like it's a mid to upper 90s heater. And so it's all about the mechanics of how it works and where you're deploying the pitch. And Freddy Peralta maximizes everything he has with his fastball. It doesn't have to be blazing. And 93 is still pretty good to work with as a foundation, but it's not over the top 99. But a lot of times it is looking like an upper 90s masterpiece to guys because of the way Freddy Peralta manipulates it.
Yeah, Castillo is by far the best on this list in my mind, but the one that I'm going to be drafting everywhere is Freddy Peralta. I mean, because I like to use something that I call the Dominator Index. It's strikeouts per nine minus hits per nine. That's for young pitchers, because you can't teach that. You can't teach, can't hit the guy. You know, strike out all the time against him. His walks per nine, 4.6, but you look at some of the best guys of all time in the Dominator Index, they all started with high walks. You can teach control, but you can't teach what Freddy Peralta has. And he's got the second best Dominator Index of any rookie ever, behind just Kerry Wood. He's unhittable. I can't wait to draft him this year.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting too, because I think you're going to get a great price on Freddy Peralta. He's going to come into the season probably without a full-time job. It's weird because last year they had that amazing bullpen and starting pitching was kind of an afterthought. I think the bullpen's still going to be good this year, but starting pitching could become a strength for them. I love Jimmy Nelson. I like Freddy Peralta.
Everyone's sleeping on the Brewers and it is stupid.
I'm a big Brandon Woodruff guy. I know a lot of folks are Corbin Burns guys, and I don't dislike Burns. It's just between those two. Woodruff and Burns kind of get paired to me. They're those relievers who could, one of them could take a starting job. I lean Woodruff, but I respect what Burns does. And then they have their steady Eddies that they used last year, like Chacin and Chase Anderson. And so I think they're going to have some depth this year. And Peralta, somebody you can steal late in drafts and just kind of hang on to. And if you are in Dynasty or in a league that has a deep reserve roster, just stash Peralta and relax on him for a little bit, because he's got a bunch of talent, and you know that no team ever just goes with their five guys and that's all they have. It's very, 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 very rare these days that a team doesn't use several starters beyond the initial five.
Now, Paul, I want to talk about three hitters as well, and these guys, we've seen them be superstars. Corey Seager, Gary Sanchez, Chris Bryant. Now, we all expect them to bounce back, but are there any of these guys, do they concern you at all?
You know, health, you always gotta be a bit concerned about health. That said, I don't, you know, we're getting quality reports on all three that they're healthy and raring to go. So let's operate under that assumption. And until we see something that suggests that they are still hurt, I'd be willing to buy all three at their current prices. They all are getting a requisite discount because of the health. Jeff Zimmerman did a piece, last year really talking about injuries and the injury proneness, that tag that we throw on guys can a lot of times be just incorrect. Unless it's a chronic injury, the same injury that keeps cropping up, or related injuries, there is still a lot of randomness to it. So unless we see the same thing, now it was a shoulder with Bryant, and it was the hip and the TJ for Seager. I get it. There are some concerns, but that's where the discount comes in. And so if you're already getting the discount, you don't then also continue to complain about the issue, right? You're taking that issue on to get Corey Seager at pick 85 or wherever he's going, or Chris Bryant at pick 40. And Gary Sanchez kind of is interesting. With me for catcher, I'm not getting Sanchez and Real Muto. I'd rather live in the middle tier of catcher, but I understand those who are going to buy back on Sanchez because he's still a premium bat. And I would buy all three at the right price here, which I think a lot of their current draft stock is the right price, because obviously everyone would buy somebody if they go six rounds beyond their ADP. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying their current prices are pretty fair for all three. Seager's my favorite of the bunch. He's going in redraft NFBC leagues around pick 90, and I'm all about that with Seager. The health, it's a concern, but give me pick 90. I already got my discount built into the price.
I agree on all three of them. We're talking about someone who's already won an MVP, someone who was already top three in the MVP vote as a rookie, and then someone who's the fastest player in MLB history to 50 home runs. And he did it as a catcher, and they're going 32. They're going 29 in Seager's case and 42 for Gary Sanchez in dynasty redrafts. That's too low. I like all of them.
For all three. Yeah, all three in dynasty, I think, are going too low. They've got good redraft and dynasty costs. I think that, you know, we talk about I've repeated it several times, the fickle nature of the market. And these aren't prospects, but once somebody gets burned, they really can move off of a player pretty quickly. And it's kind of hilarious to watch. But for me, you know, I tend to, unless I saw a real degradation of the skills, I jump back in. And, you know, yeah, Sanchez hurt last year because he hit like 188 and Bryant was just really not there with the power. And Seager, of course, didn't play. Okay, but now I still believe in the skill sets. Buy back and get that discount.
Yeah, again, they're going behind Rhys Hoskins, who is a 245 hitter, and he's been healthy, and he just hasn't really done it. So I do not understand that whatsoever. Paul, I want to talk about closers and just the strategy around them. Is there more or less appeal in dynasty leagues compared to redraft in drafting these top-tier closers?
I would say less because of the turnover. And so if you are taking an expanded view of things the way dynasty leaguers often are, I am less inclined to really dive in on the top closer. I mean, just look at the closer market. Now, this is an exceptional year. We don't always see this. And the top market was kind of living there for a while with Jansen, Kimbrel, and Chapman.
Yeah, I think some people would say, well, you know, Chapman and Kimbrel and Edwin Diaz are always going to be there, so why not get them? I say it's because there's going to be so many options to pick up soon.
Exactly. And, you know, you say you know that, and then look what happened to Jansen last year. He showed he was mortal. Kimbrel really didn't do it until the playoffs, which, of course, playoffs doesn't affect your fantasy, but he showed that he's mortal. Chapman's had injuries. His fastball is coming down. And Diaz, he wasn't there before last year, so how do you know that he's guaranteed, especially going to a new team? Blake Treinen kind of came out of nowhere, and so why can't it be just given some names? I'm not saying that these are my like full-on picks to go Treinen and Diaz this year, but would you be this surprised if Jordan Hicks and, say, I really love this guy, but the team probably isn't good enough to really shoot him up to the top, but like Jose Leclerc, if Hicks and Jose Leclerc were two of the top five closers this year, would you really be that surprised?
You're reading off my notes. I mean, those are two of the best five or six pitchers in baseball. It's just a matter of...
See?
Yeah, I totally agree. And here's the thing.
Brad Hand is going to have a full-time job with Cleveland.
Yeah, Kirby Yates is absolutely incredible.
I almost said Yates. It was between Yates and Leclerc. I love both of those guys.
Jose Alvarado is like the 25th closer off the board, and he's one of the best, too.
He's nasty. And, you know, to go homer one more time, the Tigers, Joe Jimenez has been kind of bred as the future closer. And you don't always see this. A lot of times relievers come from failed starters. But Joe Jimenez has kind of been that groomed guy. And he's going to get the role probably from day one. But even if he doesn't, even if Shane Green starts with it, he could have that role early once Shane Green gets flipped. And he's a really appealing starter at the back end. He gets a boatload of strikeouts. He's a pretty solid pitcher, too.
He was a all-star last year, and nobody knows who he is. He's awesome. He wasn't very good in the second half, but he's got killer stuff. And this time last year, we were begging people, pick up Josh Hader, pick up Jose Leclerc, pick up Jordan Hicks, and nobody knew who they were. The easiest way to get an advantage in Dynasty Baseball is to go stock up your deep rosters with guys like Trevor May, Jose Castillo, and Ray Black. Trevor May was one of the best relief pitchers in baseball in the second half last year. I think he's going to be the closer in Minnesota. Even if he's not, he's going to help you a ton in ERA, WHIP, K's. Jose Castillo, same kind of thing, flew under the radar. He's the next guy in San Diego. Injuries happen, blowups happen, and Jose Castillo could step in and be a monster. And then Ray Black striking out like 17 per nine innings in AAA and then coming up and doing the same thing.
He like averages 100.
Yes, he's going to be a beast. He could be the closer in San Francisco in 2 months.
You know, an interesting one isn't so much for long-term because he's a little bit older, but if you are looking for some saves this year, I think Pedro Strop's going to have the job all year in Chicago. I don't trust Brandon Morrow at all. And so I think Strope's going to get it and just hold it. Strope's been an elite reliever now for like 5 years running. And they could just give him that job and he could easily run with it to even...
I mean, you could say 45 games pitching for the Cubs.
Bingo. Exactly. They're going to be a quality team again. So give me Pedro Strop there. You know, balance your youth speculations in a dynasty league with somebody like a Strop who is going to be age 34, but could match his age with save total.
Paul, I haven't heard anyone else say that about Strop, but I'm fully on board. Let's close out the show here by turning to some deep sleepers. For those of you in very deep leagues, can you just give us a few names that you're fond of?
So Ramon Laureano out in Oakland. Absolutely love this guy. First off, I'll mention that I have a soft spot, maybe even a bias toward elite defenders who have some hitting skills, because it's going to keep them on the field and they can kind of get that on the job training, even if their hitting profile isn't premium. That said, it's not like Laureano is some no bat. He has a great bat, I believe, in the making. And he showed it last year in a small sample, 176 plate appearances, but he was great in AAA as well. He ended up with a 1918 homer stolen base season if you add up his AAA and major league work last year. So he's got some punch. He's got some real speed. He stole 43 bases just 2 years ago in 2016. If you might remember him from that amazing throw out in Anaheim where he was running back, he goes to the track, catches the ball over his shoulder, and then just hurls one of the most amazing throws I've ever seen back to get the double play. If you haven't seen it, just look Ramon Laureano. That's Laureano, Anaheim, or catch, and it will be up there. And he's got several defensive plays. He should be their full-time starter out in Oakland for center field. He's an elite defender, but I really like the bat too. This is another spill-off guy from Houston. They're so good that they're stocking the league with spill off guys that were either cut because they couldn't hang on to them or traded in small deals that you don't even remember because that's how rich their organization was. And Ramon Laureano is another one from Houston. So I love him in redraft and dynasty.
That's a really good call, man. Yeah, the Astros have so many guys like that. And, you know, I posted something just a week ago about the Cardinals having similar guys. Now, it's not spill-off guys. It's just they had so many outfielders, they had to get rid of some of them. You look at what Luke Voit did last year in the second half. One of the best hitters in baseball. Tommy Pham, 1,000 OPS. Steven Piscotty, 870. Randall Grichuk, 890. I mean, they filled an entire outfield, and their starting right fielder, Dexter Fowler, batted 180.
Yep. And they're still too full right now, which is crazy. I've got a pitcher for you as well, if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
Dylan Cease for the White Sox. He's a former big prospect with the Cubs. So he went crosstown, I believe, in the Jose Quintana deal with Eloy Jimenez. And of course, Jimenez really got the hype there. But Dylan Cease was in that deal as well. And he was looking like he was going to be a big-time prospect. He kind of fell down the list a little bit, kind of fell off the radar just a smidge. But then last year really emerged again. And now he's really getting hype as a top 30-type prospect. And he's going to be a call away this year. He's going to finish. He might start in AAA. I don't know. It depends. He was kind of half-season guy, 52 innings in AA, where Dylan Cease did really well. They might go ahead and start him there, get him another month or so in AA, and then put him at AAA, and then Dylan Cease will be a call away. Big-time premium strikeout guy. Does have a little bit of control issue, as you often see with some of these young strikeout guys in the minor leagues, but that's something that can be worked on. 32% strikeout rate in the minors. That's elite. So Dylan Cease I like.
That is unbelievable. He's not your prototypical strikeout guy where it's like, you know, Roger Clemens, he's big and he's just going to mow you down. He's got incredible breaking stuff. It's going to play in the big leagues, no doubt about it. The White Sox are going to be, I'm not going to say they're going to be a dynasty. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with for a long time. They've got some studs.
You're darn right they are. And they could come early this year.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're going to be a chic pick. I really do think them in San Diego, particularly if they land the big whales, that'll make it easy to make the call. But even if they don't, I think they could be the picks to be this year's Atlanta and Philly. And obviously Philly faded off, but that would still be a big year for San Diego or the White Sox to kind of be in it most of the year and then fall off. And honestly, I like the White Sox more to be the Atlanta than the Philly, because Cleveland, they're not doing enough. They think that they just got this division, which I understand, it's not a strong division, but Cleveland should be building their team for October. If you're going to assume that you're going to win the division, then you need to be making all the moves you can so that you're ready to go in October. And I don't think they're doing nearly enough of that And they're leaving the door open for Minnesota primarily right now because they've got a little bit more of a ready-made team. But then the White Sox, if the pieces come together, and of course if they get a Machado, they're going to be knocking on the door as early as this year, I believe.
Paul, here's a couple names that I really like. Jeff Hoffman, just because he has unbelievable stuff. He's with the Rockies. He's probably not going to make the rotation, but super deep. This is a guy with ace upside. Jorge Soler, he's going a little bit higher in redraft.
Post-type.
He's a post-type guy. Again, when he was healthy last year, his OPS was like 840. He was a borderline all-star candidate for a while, and this is what we always expected. Former top 5 or top 10 prospect who was even better than Chris Bryant at the same level, even younger than Chris Bryant. I mean, this is someone who is a really quality hitter. And then Patrick Wisdom, a guy that is going to start this year for the Rangers. He can mash.
Now, is he still going to start? I thought when they got Asdrubal Cabrera, that put a dent in the Patrick Wisdom shares for folks. I know that there were some other people out there who liked Wisdom, and they're like, ah, nuts. Now he's going to be more of a bench guy bouncing between first and third.
That sucks. Yes, you're right. I forgot all about that. And that's why we talk to each other, so that we can sharpen each other's minds before we go into these drafts and do something stupid, right?
But now the price is going to be nothing. Right, he was getting a little buzz there. Wisdom was for deep leagues. Now you go in, you get him with probably your last reserve pick. Like, he's not going to be front and center. And I actually see some interesting stuff with Ronald Guzman, but that doesn't mean it's going to come to fruition. Like, he's not a guarantee. So he could open up the door for Wisdom. Plus, Wisdom should start against lefties. He and Guzman should at least platoon. So if Wisdom takes advantage of what he can get going against lefties and then steals some versus righties at bats somewhere, then he could definitely be the guy. And Shinsu Chu's 37 years old. So DH could open up as well. So I like Wisdom. That's an interesting late breakout call. Same with Soler. They're older. They're no longer prospects, but they could still break out. They're still in the midst of their quote-unquote prime.
I can't wait to use Wisdom in DFS against lefties. He's just one of those guys. He's going to be 2,100, and I'll use him almost every single time. Paul, I got one more name for you, and this is the one I'm most excited about. Franklin Barreto. I've talked about him before, and everyone's like, oh, come on. We've seen 57 games. He's batting .215. No, he's really, really good. Now he's blocked by Jurickson Profar, so you can get him for free, basically. If he was still prospect eligible, I'd have Barreto in my top 20 prospects, and I think you could buy him as though he's like an 80th prospect.
Oh, I mean, maybe even less. My podcast co-host, Justin Mason, is a big fan of Barreto, and he's really not looking to give up on him at all, and he thinks that everyone's just sleeping on Barreto. So he's gotten me to take a second look at him, because I was part of that group that was just kind of sleeping and out on Franklin Barreto. He was a big time prospect now for years. And this is, again, this really does fit into the just gets forgotten because his initial sample wasn't any good. And yet I think you should at least pay some attention to Franklin Barreto. He's only 23. He's not some aged veteran that's just like, should be phased out. Now, is he going to get to break camp over somebody like Chad Pinder? I don't know, but Pinder does have options. So there's no reason that if Barreto goes out and does his thing, he shouldn't get that role over Chad Pinder. I've actually weirdly a bit of a fan of Chad Pinder. I know that that's a weird name to bring up. First off, I love his nickname, which is Swipe Right, because it's a play on Tinder. But really dorky thing that in MLB The Show, there is this draft mode that you do, and you draft your team, and you try to win 12 games before you lose two, and they're like little three-inning games. And you have to draft, you can't just draft all superstars. You have to draft some common and bronze players. And Pinder happened to be one of the bronze players, and he absolutely went off. I won 12 games on my stream on Twitch that night, and Pinder was like the star, even though we had superstars on the team. So he became a fan favorite, so I actually really like him, and I hope he doesn't get the role taken away from him. But with his three options, I think he and Barreto could battle kind of for that bench infield spot, and Barreto could end up taking it from him. So you want to look out for that in spring, particularly if you're a Barreto fan.
That's a great point. I'd kind of given up on the notion that he had a chance of starting this year, but last year in the minors, 872 OPS in AAA as a 22-year-old. If this wasn't someone who'd already been up in the majors and we'd seen him, you know, fail a little bit, we'd be super pumped about him.
And we get so excited for guys who've done literally nothing versus those who've come up, had 151 plate appearances of mediocrity or even bad work. We'll call it bad. It was 82 OPS plus. That's, you know, 18% below league average. It's pretty bad. But it's nothing. It's a tiny sample. And it's just so crazy. I talk about it. I've mentioned it like 50 times on this show, but just in my own stuff, how quickly we move on. And it's so bizarre to me. It's like, give guys a chance, for crying out loud. If you loved Franklin Barreto before last year, 75 plate appearances should not have changed your opinion 1%.
I know this is kind of going back quite a bit, but he reminds me a ton of Brett Boone. Brett Boone had a really good career.
Yes, Brett Boone was fantastic. Now, he might have had some help there, but I'm also not one to believe that that PEDs are miracle drugs where they just take you from a mediocre player into a star. I think it's more of like keeping you on the field thing. So it's not like Brett Boone was utter trash and then had that breakout. Like, he was
and he was one of like 80% of people doing it too.
Well, yeah, of course. So it's like, I'm not going to put it all on him. But and we're not saying that Barreto has done that. We're talking about the player type, which is a middle infield with some pop. And there's actually some speed to Barreto's game, too. So that's an interesting name. Like I said, I've recently had given him a second look because Justin Mason was talking him up so well. And I was like, what are you talking about? Barreto, I was on the no, he's garbage train. And I had to check myself and realize, no, 23 years old. Don't give up on a prospect like that, or else I'm just doing what I accuse everybody else of.
I'm glad you're with me, Paul, and this was a lot of fun. We always go a little bit over when we talk, but I live for it. I'm sure everyone loved the bonus content, too, so thank you again for taking the time to come on.
Thanks for having me on, Bobby. I hope you feel better.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And guys, we've got two more shows coming up next week, so make sure to hit that subscribe button. That way you don't miss out on any future shows. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball.